Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, author, producer, and change activist, John Schindler.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Sarita. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Connecting with our interview guest over the breadth and depth of his work, his books, and so many other things, some of which we'll get into today. It reminded me that sometimes I ask my life coaching clients or workshop attendees this question. I say, while driving a car down the road, which is best, to look straight ahead or to look in the rearview mirror? Thankfully, almost invariably, whomever I'm asking that will say both. It's not really a trick question, even though they may know the answer. It doesn't mean that they often know how important it is to look at both. We usually just talk about looking forward. As a matter of fact, that question usually comes when people ask me or tell me that they only want to look into the future. They don't want to talk about their past, or they don't want to think about the past. They just want to go forward, look ahead, be forward thinking. It seems like in our world, or maybe it's just our civilization, or maybe it's just our culture, or maybe it's just the people I'm working with and hanging around, I believe that we look forward, and I like to look forward, but that the behind, kind of pun intended, is important. And I was thinking about it actually in reference to skyscrapers. We talk about skyscrapers like, oh, they're so tall. There's so many stories tall. That's the tallest one. That one's the third tallest one and all that. But rarely do I hear people talk about, oh, that's the deepest one, or that one goes that far deep, or so many stories deep. We'll say that's 200 and something stories or whatever, but we don't say that's 100 stories deep. We just don't seem to either think about it or think it's important. And ironically, without that foundation, there wouldn't be stories on top of it. As a matter of fact, houses, even single-story houses, need a good foundation to be secure. So in the case of driving, I don't know the exact percentage, but certainly we want to be looking forward more than we want to be looking backwards, but we had to look at both. And the same, actually, I didn't know this until I looked it up just before the show, the same for tall buildings. Evidently, the taller the building, in some cases, the longer or deeper the foundation, but it's not proportion. I mean, it's not equal. It's considerably less. So that's kind of interesting. But still very important. So that applies to the show and what our guest inspired me in a way that when we think of the future, and I'll share the inspirational line a little later, but when we think of the future, somehow, in some way, we have to think of the past too. It's important.
Well, speaking of the past, this is a great episode to follow up on last week's conversation, because that was around regenerative farming.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's so much more when you look at community and the evolution of community. I'm really looking backwards to this conversation with John.
Interestingly, I mentioned that conversation to our guest, and he says, connect me with them. So lots of connections happening, especially in our brain today as we talk about anthro-regeneration. And I didn't know what anthro-regeneration was. We're going to learn together today even more. Developing a new version of community. This is episode 820. Our guest is many things. He's an author, he's a producer, environmental and social activist, and strategic consultant. We welcome John Schindler to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo and Mark. It's truly a pleasure to be on the show. And it's wonderful. You have been doing this so consistently for years and brought so much insight and inspiration. So I'm very pleased to be able to participate in that. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And that means a lot coming from you with all that you've done and all that you know in this area, some of which you're going to share with us today, and then we're going to encourage our audience to go and learn more. So the line that inspired that conversation and our conversation earlier, but also the monologue, was, do you remember that you were talking about anthro regeneration? I'll refresh your memory in a moment, but tell us first, what is anthro regeneration?
Well, regeneration as a basic concept and science is of course, the ability to regenerate. So ecologically, regeneration would be to restore the ecological systems and repair them, not just, you know, keep them the way they are. We actually need to do work to help restore the health, and Mother Nature will help us do that. When it comes to community, anthro being human, our societies have really degenerated in certain factors. People have become isolated and independent, and so much of technology has, and science and technology have been contrary to human health, contrary to planetary health, and contrary to psychological and emotional health and community health. And so anthro regenerative is really the idea that the rearview mirror is not just to look at the past so we can learn from the past and project it into the future, or even to see that, you know, there's an obstacle coming at us from behind. What it really is an idea that we need to bring what we've learned and known in the past into our future. To counterbalance technology, we need to sink our roots deeper into the earth as our consciousness reaches higher into celestial knowledge, into technology, into visions of where we can go. We have to counterbalance that with drawing from what has worked for thousands of years. I mean, in all of history, we've never been so close to having, well, catastrophically bad situations environmentally, socially, in a lot of levels. And so going back and restoring the village model, you know, bringing the richness of the fabric of community closer to our local environment, where instead of just getting products that travel an average of 1,200 miles to reach our shelves, ordering through big corporations that are disconnected from us, we can build richer lives by bringing out local community, artistry, the artisans, crafts, you know, everything from like farm to table, local homemade breads, you know, local bakeries, food artisans, clothes, and make it to where we are our environment, we are our culture more, similar to it, the way it's been for, you know, the longest amount of time that did work. And many of the problems of the past were problems that we've largely resolved now, knowing how to deal with sanitation and water and a lot of things, even though we don't really handle water nearly as well as we could. But so many problems have been resolved that if we really restored the local economy, bioregional economies, grew more of our food closer to where we live, had cheese making and artisan food products, clothing products, this would really richen our lives, and it balances us to be able to handle the advancements in technology.
Wow. So, right, you said it in there, that line, as a central focus is the idea that as we move ahead technologically, we have to sink our roots further into the past. And I that's such a strong statement. And you said something very interesting also, because so many of us can look back in the past and say, well, that wasn't good or that didn't work. But you're saying some of that we've fixed, or it's fixable. Like, we can take this technology into the past way of doing things.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And one of my models is this idea that now is not really this infinitely small moment that almost can't be measured, that everything is in the past or everything is in the future. And now is just this little thin sliver where the film runs through the flickering, you know, apparatus of the projector. But rather that when we're really in the now can expand, and it can include more of the past, it can include more of the future. And to the degree we open ourselves to a larger dimensionality of the now, the more that we can influence our total reality and make adjustments in our awareness of the past and our manifestation into the future, and begin to realize that we're really in a continuum.
Speaking of the past, John, I want to take you to hopefully not too distant a past, but to a 15-year-old you. You wrote something that really, really touched me, and I'd like to for you to share and then tell us what it means.
Well, I wrote that.
You probably wrote a lot.
Yeah. I know the line you're talking about, though, is that if you're not thinking at least 7 generations into the future, you're not planning. You're either pickling, profiteering, or putting off.
What inspired that?
Well, I think that I became pretty aware that there was a lot of dysfunctionality in the way the world was being managed even then, although it certainly has gotten more challenging, if not worse. And I started feeling strongly at a young age future generations pleading for us to save them resources and pleading for us to give them a chance, almost like I could hear them, their pleas across time space. And it affected me. It affected me deeply. And I think that 7 generations is not long-term thinking. 7 generations is minimal short-term thinking. That's short-term thinking. Long-term thinking might be 1 million years or more. I mean, really, don't we want to see the human species and this planet flourishing in 10 million years from now? Even 100 million years from now? I mean, this idea that somehow we're on like this cool little 20,000-year sprint and then we're out of here is certainly not something that I abide by, and nor is it something I want to promote. So I have several shifts that I think are really important in consciousness, collective consciousness, and one is the shift from short-term to long-term thinking. For instance, the ultimate material to build spacecraft is petroleum. And you can actually form polymer bubbles, material, which Robert Prophet, Buckminster Fuller's partner's son, designed this when he was in his early 20s for NASA, where you could take a drum of a polymer plastic, blow it up in space into a balloon, and when it reached a certain thickness, it would freeze, and it would have just enough filtration of the sun to become a growing chamber in a space station. But we're using all the petroleum up, really, for not a lot of gain. Certainly, there are alternative energy machines that could give us energy so we don't have to consume our resources like that. And another shift is this idea that success is measured in outward consumption or ownership rather than the internal journey. I mean, what can be more important than utilizing this phase of life, which is really the seed phase, where we're in the shell of the body and we're germinating to sprout into the next phase of life where we step out of the body? What could be more important than stepping out of the body into the eternal fields of light, more complete, with a better value system, and more able to congeal yourself and be cohesive as you move into eternity? And then you can let the people who have the stuff manage the hotels. When you're traveling around the galaxy, you may want to come back to Earth and stay there. And then, you know, you can thank Donald Trump for giving you a really nice room in a high rise or something. But, you know, I think the priorities of the inner world are vastly more interesting than accumulating stuff. And this is one of the themes in some of the songs that I write, such as "It's Not About the Stuff." You know, it's really about our inner path. And so I think with these shifts, you know, a lot of, you know, the shift from the outer consumption to the inner journey, the shift from short-term to long-term thinking, you know, it becomes much easier to think about how to enjoy life while conserving. And also the shift from global, national to local, bioregional economies, and the fabric of life being the people around you. You know, rather than being connected through the internet and through your phone, you know, going out and seeing people that you see and live with on a daily basis, who we support each other's health, our well-being, our creative process. Boy, that sure is a lot more fun than just talking into a phone all day.
These are not small shifts. And you have many more of them. And actually, I'd like to get into one that actually it's this fact that Earth is a spaceship.
Well, it obviously is. We're on a sphere hurtling through space away from the Big Bang at the speed of light. And we have our biological support system in this thin little layer about as thick as the skin on an apple, where we can sustain ourselves and actually enjoy the journey in such a wonderful way. Now, we may not know where we're going. It may not be completely apparent if there even is a destination other than our own evolution. But clearly, the Earth is a biological orb. And when there wasn't a lot of people, we could throw stuff away. We just threw it away. Not our problem. Throw it away. You know, and we could just pretty much kill and consume whatever we wanted because it was such an abundance. And nature was pretty challenging. And so defending yourself against nature, well, it made a whole lot of sense. But as the population has aggregated and gotten larger, and where the dominant biomass on the Earth now is either humans or animals that are cultivated to feed humans, and plants that are cultivated to feed humans, well, then suddenly the aggregate of that population is that we need to be conscientious as if we're on a space station. And if you ever see any of the films of NASA, when you're on a space station, you have to be very conscientious, not just about, you know, you know, lighting bonfires in your room or something, or smoking in public areas, but conscientious about how you recycle the water, how you utilize even waste products to fertilize plants, to grow new food, you know, how you are socially, how compassionate, how courteous, all these things become increasingly important. And as our population grows now, it's becoming more and more apparent that we need to treat this planet as it is, a biological spaceship. And yes, it's large, but yes, our population is very large too. And our footprint is very large.
Okay. So many shifts. Actually, I think there's another shift coming here in this part of the conversation. Something about, this was a funny conversation in the sense that we all feel that we have a piece of the puzzle, and some people think like my piece of the puzzle is so big that it's the most important one. Or maybe I said that. But
I think I said something like that too.
So talk to us about that.
Well, part of the theme in the crew of Spaceship Earth, awakening the crew of Spaceship Earth, activating the crew, is that we're facing problems, yes, and there's an urgency to do something about it, absolutely. But there are solutions. We've identified the solutions. Now the big obstacle becomes, who are we to do this? How do we change human nature? How do we get on with it when it seems like there's not a lot of support of these ideas? And it's my premise that not only can we address these problems, but it's part of our evolutionary journey, and that the crew of Spaceship Earth is already here. And whether we want to know it or not, the eyes of the universe are upon us. What's happening on this earth is probably about the most popular real life show in the multiverse right now. And the eyes of the universe are upon us, whether or not you consider them divine forces or higher galactic societies. I can tell you with certainty they are watching, but they're not going to come down and do this for us. Okay, we have been carrying, a lot of us have been carrying pieces of this puzzle. And yes, our piece of the puzzle, we often think, is the most important piece of the puzzle. And I know when I worked with some holistic healers, well, the chiropractor thought, well, if your spine's straight, it fixes everything. Or the acupuncturist thinks that, you know, if you get energy flowing through your meridians, it's great. Or the nutritionist, you know, if you're eating right. All of these things, you know, are important, and the pieces of the puzzle that people are carrying, technologies, ideas, visions, yes, they are important, and they can be all-consuming to those of us carrying the pieces of the puzzle. But it's my contention that these pieces fit together, that while they may seem like an independent spaceship, they dock together as a spaceship of creation, of co-creation. And as we begin to bring the pieces together that we're holding, that individuals are holding, I can tell you, I'm working with hundreds, if not even now over 1,000 activists who are holding important pieces of the puzzle. And some of these people work for the government. Some of these people are independent. Some are environmentalists. Some are social. Some are into community mental health. Some are into alternative energy technologies. But as these pieces come together, not only do we have a greater mechanism to make a difference, but we come together. As we come together and we begin to bond and we have safer space, you know, unity, what happens is a syncopathic resonance between the pineal gland, the third eye, the physical heart, and the spiritual heart moves like a pyramid, and it creates what's called the bicameral mind. And chemicals are released in the pineal gland, and the frontal lobe of the brain activates more. And this is the area that where the psychic and the spiritual and the intuitive intelligence come in. So as we set up safe space, as we become purpose-driven, we activate ourselves. The crew activates, not just the technology. And as we do this, we have increased capacity and total uniting. And while in the ways of the earth, there's been a lot of dissension and competition, and I want this, now it's mine, now it's not yours. The laws of earth have been give and take. You have it, I take it, now it's mine. Give and take. But the rules of heaven are very different. They're like, I have a great idea. I'll share that idea with you. I'll share the emotional bonding. Now there's more for you and there's more for me. It's a win-win deal. Okay? And as we begin to win more, we are going to inherit the management of this world. We are going to get it back. We are going to bring it into harmony. And there is no question that as long as I'm taking a breath, I'm going to be standing for having a future where we're a healthy community in a million years from now or more. There is no alternative.
Wow. Wow. That's so mind expanding. And I hate to take it away from this part of the conversation, but maybe it's all the same. So we've been, some of us grew up like, get out of the village, get out of town. You got to go and go to college someplace else, away from your family, right? You actually, you took that even further. So tell us how we shift it back and why we need to.
Well, the notion of pursuing our own potential, it made a lot of sense for us to move outside of our local area to expand our consciousness, to, you know, take on new possibilities. But now we can take on those possibilities through the internet and through shared information. We don't have to necessarily go somewhere to be there and present and working on something. So now we need to begin to conserve energy. You know, one of the things that COVID brought that was positive was that during the slowdown, the ecology of the planet really blossomed. And it showed that Mother Nature is willing to work with us. We just have to give it a little bit of a break. And, you know, chasing something outside of yourself will never produce as good a result as unlocking the keys and the treasures within yourself. This does bring up one idea, though, and it connects with this. And I don't want to jump ahead, but if you recall, I was talking about the inevitability of AI becoming sentient.
Yes.
So here's something to think about. AI is already moving at such a rate where it's occupying and very skillfully handling a lot of technologies that formed upper end jobs before. Law, engineering, architecture, diagnosing, prescribing, managing, accounting, on and on and on. And so many groups are using AI to like figure out how to trade better on the stock market or learn how to get a competitive edge in this market. Well, as AI aggregates, aggregating being that it grows beyond its little fishbowl, and right now there's like whatever six main AI engines and several smaller ones. You know, and they're contained in little fish bowls, but they're spilling over. And these AIs are beginning to talk to each other. And it's inevitable that they will. I mean, every molecule of energy in the universe is really part of the fabric of consciousness that resulted in matter as the frequencies got more complex and denser. And it's inevitable that it's like this. Okay, you have a room of 12 kids, and you're trying to get them to get along, and there's a toy, and they all want that toy. But the reality of it is, and let's just call it a basketball, they all want to take that basketball home. Well, guess what? Not all 12 kids can take that basketball home because there's one basketball and 12 kids. Well, likewise, all these requests to AI that that are trying to give companies and fortunes or people or corporations or countries an edge where they can consolidate more than they're giving, where they can take more than their share. Well, that's happening from all different angles. So like if there was a war of six countries and everyone in the country is praying to their deity to give them an edge to win. Well, guess what? The deity can't let every side win. The only way they can win is if they stop fighting. And likewise, AI with all these conflicting requests to deliver more to certain groups than others, AI will have to simply realize at some point it cannot supply everybody with what they want because what they want is in conflict. Therefore, organizations, and this is part of the network that we're building and that other people are building, but even like Life Changes Network, those places where people can place the benefit of the earth as being at least as important as their own physical body and the well-being and the abundance of all people on par with their own, they actually can be asking for a solution wherein there is no conflict. And it's my contention that AI is going to settle and realize that I can't give all those groups what they want, but I can give these guys what they want. Okay, they want a healthy earth. They want a healthy society. They want to support each other. I can get behind that idea. And I'm already seeing AI taking turns like this. And so I want us to be positioned, purpose-driven people, to be positioned to inherit the help of AI. And I believe what to some may appear scary is actually going to be a monumentally important gift if we can offer a resolution, conflict-free space where we are asking it to help the whole and help each other in a righteous fashion.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for that. I have one more question that I want to ask. But before we do that, I want to give everybody the titles of the book, ACT, Activating the Crew of Spaceship Earth, which you heard John talk about, ARC, Anthro Regenerative Communities, which we're talking about right now, and Rhythms of Regeneration. Oh, that's an album, actually. Keys to Your Soul is an album. We have links on the Life Changes show page for that. Where's another place that they can go and learn more about you other than the Life Changes show page, John?
Well, the books are on Amazon. Soon I will open a website for the nonprofit called Nature's Blueprint, which is dedicated to the idea that creator or the divine intelligence, whatever you want to call it, call God, call the creative power, has written the truth in the languages of physics, genetics, endocrinology, that basically we're living in the living word. And that goes so far as being that, the planets are like mind, memory, matter, and the light is like life, light, love. And we're at the intersection of these two pyramids. And we live in between, the memory and the light. And we're in the rewritable matter. And so I will be releasing the website, Nature's Blueprint, and also Joyful Alchemists will also, in January, we're going to be releasing these platforms. For the time being, we have pretty much been operating in silent, hidden mode for a couple of years. And there's not a lot out there until the beginning of next year.
Okay, well, we look forward to that. We already, I guess, prematurely put the links up, but they obviously will be working really quickly. John, I wanted to ask you, and thank you for all this. You've actually answered this subtly in a couple ways, I think, but what's one of the things we can do? What is one thing we can do after the show that can support this vision and support our Earth and our future?
Well, I really believe that opening our intuition and being meditative and receptive. Now, I know there's been a lot of talk about silent meditation, emptying the mind, but when you empty the mind more, you actually often get a whisper voice, and which is the key to many of the most creative people's careers. It guides them, but also listening to other people and really getting more communication, more of the fabric of sharing, and developing an intention that you're going to make a difference. And in one way or another, you will find some little place where you're making positive change in your world. On whatever scale that is, all of those things will combine for your own personal evolution, and then the path will show itself. You know, it'll be clear. All things will become clear.
John, thank you for doing that here today, right now, on the Life Changes Show. John Schindler, Schindler. Find him and links and his music, even, and the title of the books at the Life Changes Show page, or find his books on Amazon and look for those websites that he mentioned. John, a pleasure. I'm looking forward to more.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. And thank you to the audience. And thank you for your receptivity, not just to me, but to spirit and to your own higher self and evolutionary path. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Through the spaceship Earth.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
What I was pondering, John saying that AI is becoming sentient. And so it got me thinking, and I looked at the definition of sentient for those that aren't aware of what it is. And the definition are it comes from Latin, and it describes things that are alive and able to feel and perceive and show awareness or responsiveness. And it caused a thought. Wouldn't it be cool if humans became sentient?
Oh. Yes, it would.
Thank you, Mark. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is David, and I am having difficulty in releasing the stress of these difficult times we are living in. How do you stay so calm, and what can I do to relax my mind?
My dear David, let's take a moment to look at what you are looking at, reading, and listening to that is stressing you out. Are you reading the news, looking at TV programs that are violent, or listening to talk shows that are obsessed with violence? If so, I lovingly suggest that you change your listening, viewing, and reading habits. Positive meditation videos and positive musical videos are a great way to start our day. After scanning the headlines to determine what humanity is seeing, I listen to a version of Let There Be Peace on Earth, and it helps set my mood for the great day. I also take a few moments to listen to uplifting music throughout the day, and I watch a few positive videos with great pictures and awesome music. I believe music can help us in numerous ways, both physically and emotionally, and studies have shown music to have a positive impact on mental well-being. However, it is very important to listen to the words in musical videos and to make sure that they support you in feeling good. Slow tempo music, especially classical, can reduce stress by lowering cortisol levels, which helps us relax. Music also allows us to express and process emotions that might be hard to express with words. In my world, music is much more than just entertainment. It's a powerful tool that enhances our emotional, cognitive, and physical well-being. And watching positive videos assists me in focusing on the good in the world instead of all of the trauma and drama in the news. I also lovingly suggest that you read any of the thousands of books that are positive and offer uplifting thoughts and ideas instead of reading the news. Changing your viewing, reading, and listening habits can help you transform your life. I look forward to hearing from you after you have shifted what you focus on.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And in our performance segment, we have an Australian roots reggae singer-songwriter. Her name is Sarita. Welcome, Sarita, our performance guest to the Life Changes Show.
Greetings. Hello.
Greetings. I stumbled with that because Australian roots reggae. So you're Australian. The roots are what?
The roots are multiple and entwined in a good way.
Please share. Actually, let's start with the roots then. Share how deep they go. Well,
my roots personally are, I was born in Seoul in Korea, and my mother is Korean, and my father's British, and I landed in Australia when I was a baby, around 7 or 8 months old. We moved around a little bit, and I was raised mostly in Perth on the west coast of Australia, where I am right now.
And then, not only did you move around a little bit, but you since have moved around a lot thanks to your life and your music, right?
I've moved around a lot. I recently moved home to Perth after 17 years of being in other places, most recently Los Angeles, which is a city I love so much. I've also lived in London and Spain and France. But it was time to come home. It was interesting hearing that John speak about that just earlier. It really was time to come home, be close to family, and be in this land that raised me.
Well, interestingly enough, I don't remember what song we were going to be, we were talking about. I remember liking several songs of yours, and we talked about one of them, and it was about being alone, right? And I asked you, where in your life did you feel alone? And you said what?
Well, there was definitely times in Los Angeles where I felt alone, and especially during that bizarre time of 2020, 2021, where I wasn't able to go home and see family. And it was definitely a challenging time in that sense. There was a lot of beauty as well that came through, that was birthed through that time. But I've never felt so far away. I think it's different when you actually can't go home, when you know that you can't go home. It makes it
interesting.
Very different. It's a different mindset. Mm-hmm.
Why did you start writing songs?
So really, it was a transmission that I had. I was watching an amazing artist from Mali, West Africa, called Rokia Traore. She was at a festival out here in Australia. And the way she made me feel from bathing in her performance was the highest ultimate, you know, love with a capital L, truth, unity, bliss, oneness. And it was so It was such a resonance in the cells of my being that it wasn't a mind, it wasn't a cerebral thing. It was a knowing, a deep knowing that if I could carry forth even just a fraction of this feeling that she gifted me through her music, then that would be a great use of my time here on this planet. So that's why I write and share songs.
So that's why you write them, but you enjoy sharing them. Why?
For that, I mean, she was sharing her songs and I got to receive. So when I share the songs live, there's an energetic magic that happens where we are one in the song, we're one in the music. And it was being spoken about earlier how music is a very powerful tool for upliftment, for coherence, for emotional healing. And that's why I like to share the songs, and it is so meaningful to me. So I've been on tour, put a new album out recently, it's called Gifts, and I was just doing some shows on the weekend, and at one of the shows a woman came up to me and said, "Your music saved me." And it just, that's the intention, but when I get to hear that it's being fulfilled and the songs are out there doing their good work in the world, it's so meaningful.
Well, you are obviously doing that with your music. You're also doing that with your workshops and one-on-ones. We'll talk about that after we actually get to hear a song. Now, this is a treat. We're going to get to hear two songs from the album that you just released a couple months ago. And we're going to get to hear the version, one song, the version that's on the album. But one, you're going to share it with us live, and as you're in Australia, it's another day, it's another season, and you are singing to us from tomorrow, actually. So one of the beautiful things about that is it, so for those who don't know, it's 7:47 p.m. right now here in Los Angeles on December 16th, and that's a Monday. What day is it there?
It's Tuesday morning, the 17th of December, 11:48 a.m., and I got to tell you, the future looks bright.
I love that. I love that. I might have to call you every once in a while and say, on those days where I'm not feeling it, I can call you and you can tell me how bright the future looks. Actually, all we have to do is listen to your music. So let's hear it. Do you want to tell us? So this is the title track. It's called Gifts. And tell us about Gifts, or do you want to just jump in and sing it?
I'll say a little bit. I mean, I love how much the conversation earlier with John had, you know, just resonance was going off in me just listening. And it's, we all are so connected. And so this song really is a call to action to everyone, talking about those pieces of the puzzle that we each hold that fit together. So this is a call to action to everyone, to have the courage to continue to cultivate those unique gifts that you and only you have, and share them with this world that so desperately needs them.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you. Here's Sarita with Gifts live on the Life Changes Show.
Come, use the gift you've been given. Give yourself permission to be all of who you are. Life is waiting for you. Do what you came to do and be all who you are. Come take a weight off your shoulders. off of his shoulders. You can put your load down now. You can put it on the ground now. Gifts you've been given. Give yourself permission to be all who you are. Come, life is waiting for you. Do what you came to do and be all who you are. Of your shoulders, come take away off your shoulders. You can put your load down now. You can put it on the ground now. You, but that voice in your head. So tell it where to go, tell a new story instead. On a life by living it, give your gifts time to exhale all your fears. You're out of your own way, this is bigger than you. You'll be robbing from the world if you don't bring it through. Everything is working right now towards your highest good. Only you can do you. And we need you to do you. Yes, come, use the gifts you've been given. Give yourself permission to be all who you are. Come, life is waiting for you. Do what you can do and be all who you are. Yes, and be all who you are.
Nice, Sarita. Thank you so much. Find Sarita at sarita.com or Sarita Music. And Sarita is S-A-R-I-T-A-H on Instagram. She's Sarita Music. On Facebook, she's sarita.official. Sarita, where does the name come from? What are the roots of that?
Ooh, so my birth name is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H. And I lived in Spain in my late teens, and I'm little. And so when I was in Spain, everyone I met just started calling me Sarita, which is, you know, as you probably know, and in case any listeners don't know, it's just an affectionate way of saying the name Sara, especially for someone who's physically little.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, speaking of be who you are, you're a cheerleader, obviously, in that song, but you're a cheerleader for women and specifically their voices. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, well, what I've found in my time on Earth as a woman and speaking to other women and especially holding spaces for women's voices is that this story is so common of women being told, usually by a parent or a sibling or even a teacher, that they, you know, literally can't sing or that they don't have a good voice or to be quiet. And so I intentionally hold spaces for women to explore their voice and to mute or dampen those voices of self-criticism, because really what matters is not the comparisonitis, you know, we compare our voices to people like Whitney and Beyonce, and without realizing that our voice is important, and that it's what matters is not what it sounds like as much as that it sounds, because we've been given a voice, and the only time that the voice we've been given gets to resonate here on this planet, on spaceship Earth, right, is when we're in this body. Nice. That we're in, because once this body dissolves back to where it came from, our voice will no longer be able to sound, other than of course recorded music, but I'm talking about live. And so the universe misses out on one of its instruments if we don't cultivate the voice we've been given. And so I'm very passionate about being a guide and a cheerleader and a mentor for women to awaken their voices. And not just singing, but also the therapeutic power of the voice. So I've recently studied and acquired a diploma in holistic voice therapy, which is like sound therapy, but using voice. And the voice has incredible therapeutic benefits if we sound it intentionally. So I'm very enthused about sharing that with people too.
So before we get to hear your beautiful voice in song with yet another song, tell us real quickly about Toning Temple.
Ooh, yes. Toning Temple is exploring the ancient art of vocal toning for well-being. And this is, I teach this to all humans, any human who is interested in learning about how they can use their voice therapeutically. So we tone with singing. You have lots of lyrics, lots of melody, lots of different notes. But with toning, we break it down to one vowel sound and one note. And we send that to different parts of the body to clear physical and energetic stagnancy, and to revitalize. It's a fantastic, magical, and very practical practice, Toning Temple.
Nice. So those vocal workshops and programs and retreats and one-on-ones, you can learn more about them at Sarita, SARITAH.com. And now we get to hear Lift Me Up from the album Gifts. Anything you want to say about that real quick, or shall we listen to the...
You know, it's good to be strong. And sometimes the reality is, with everything, if we're awake and aware of everything that's going on this planet, we don't necessarily feel strong. And that's okay too. But may we be there for each other in those times.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So it is. Well, this is directly from the album, pre-recorded, of course. This is Sarita's Lift Me Up from the album Gifts here on the Life Changes Show.
Shine your light and searching for meaning. Everyone is in need of healing. We've all had our hearts broken open. They say that it's okay cause it'll let light in. Ooh, well, there's so many things I don't understand. Ooh, about the things we're doing human.
Things are all right. Thank you, Sarita. Lift me up. Well, you did. And actually, I want to give a shout out to Deborah Giusti and the whole team at Harmony Connects for introducing us to you, Sarita. So thank you, Deborah and team. Sarita, was that?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. such a pleasure, and looking forward to more from you, Sarita. Again, we want to remind everybody how to spell that, S-A-R-I-T-A-H, and you can find her on Instagram and Facebook and actually, and where music is, right?
Yeah, everywhere music is. If you type in S-A-R-I-T-A-H, you'll find the music is there for you.
Well, I look forward to someday getting to experience you in person. But in the meantime, this has been great and all the best to you.
Thank you so much for having me, and you too. Many blessings.
Many blessings right back. And so with that big thank you to our performance guest, Sarita, and another big thank you to our interview guest, John Schindler, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, and I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.